Let's go ahead and get started on our study today in the book of Genesis, chapter number 32. We're going to begin in verse 21, but it's kind of a summary of something we've already read. And that is that Jacob is preparing to meet his brother Esau after 20 years of absence from Canaan. And he's worried about it. He's nervous. Because the last time he was with Esau, Esau wanted to kill him. And so he wants to make amends. And he's taken a very large number of his animals, along with the workers that work with them, and he has gifted them to Esau. He's sending them ahead down the path toward Mount Seir, where he knows that Esau is going to come by them, because he's heard the story that Esau, along with 400 riders, are coming his direction. So he stretches out all these gifts into groups of, I think it's like five or six groups. And all of it, every time Esau comes to one of them, each one of these groups is supposed to say, "We are a gift from your servant Jacob," because he wants to give this to his lord Esau. So Jacob is trying his best, and I think we really need to pat him on the back for that, to make up for what he did. So the rest of the story is this, Genesis 32, 21. "So the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp." Now the camp that we've got in mind here is going to get a new name in a moment. "The same night he arose and he took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Yabuk." Now, the Yabuk is a river. I think it's the second largest tributary of the Jordan River. It flows into the Jordan from the east, just a little over halfway down the Jordan Valley from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea. And wherever he's at here, he has to cross this river in order to get to where he's going next. And my best guess is that he had followed the main trade route down past Geresh, and then followed this Yabuk River, probably on the south side of it, as it's heading down to the Jordan. But at this place, he has to cross to the north side of it because he wants to get down into the Jordan Valley, where there's a big wide area that's on the north side of the Yabuk, and that's where he wants to be next. Nobody knows for sure where Yabuk, this crossing site is, but there are some guesses, and it matches what I've just described to you. All right, so he takes his family, and he sent them across the stream, and everything else that he did. So he sends all the stuff ahead across, and tells them, "You set up camp over there," until finally Jacob was left alone. So he's all by himself. Now, it doesn't specifically say it here, but I am guessing, based on what we've read so far and what we know is going through his head right now, he was probably praying. He was probably talking to God about getting through this meeting with Esau. And at some point during the night, a man shows up on the scene. Now, we know that this man is actually the angel of God, the messenger of God taking on human form. And somehow Jacob gets into a wrestling match with this man, with this angel. It probably has something to do with the words back and forth. he might have identified himself as God's messenger. And Jacob pleads with him to protect his family and protect his property and to let things work out with Esau. And what starts as pleading soon turns into a physical begging. And the man and Jacob are grappling with one another as Jacob is quite insistent about what needs to happen next. Now, some of this I derive from the book of Hosea, which mentions this event. Hosea chapter 12 has an indictment of God against the nation of Israel and how there is judgment coming against them. But in this poetic address of the nation of Israel's judgment, God goes back to the beginning of them as a people group, back to Jacob and his kids. And this is what it says about him, Hosea chapter 12, verse number 3. In the womb, he took his brother by the heel. And remember, that's how he got his name, heel grabber, Jacob. Because that's how they came out. First, Esau is the first twin that is out of the womb, but Jacob is right behind him holding on to his heel. So in the womb, he took his brother by the heel. In his manhood, he strove with God. He strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. So this wrestling match included a lot of crying and begging. And when it says here that he strove with God, that he strove with the angel, remember what we've talked about before. Angels represent God so perfectly that if you are interacting with them, you are interacting with God. So the question always comes up here, did Jacob wrestle with God or did Jacob wrestle with the angel? And the answer is yes. He did wrestle with God, and he did it by wrestling with the angel of God. I am not in the camp of those that think that this is Jesus that he wrestled with. I understand their thinking in that, but I can't feel with confidence that I can go down that path. All right, so back to the Genesis 32 passage. So he wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now, we don't know when it started. It was sometime during the night, during the hours of darkness. So maybe a few hours they're wrestling back and forth. But now the light is starting to pop up on the horizon to the east. And verse 25, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, meaning that he couldn't win, but that as Jacob wouldn't leave him alone. See, Jacob has got it in his head, I can't let this angel of God, this messenger of God, get away from me until he promises me everything will be okay. So he's just hanging on to him. So when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. So the angel uses some special angel wrestling move, and he dislocates Jacob's hip. And that's quite painful, and that will chill the whole wrestling match real fast. But still, he won't let go. So the angel said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So Jacob, even with his hip hurting him horribly, because it's gone out of place, it's probably popped back into place now, but it hurts horribly, but he won't let the angel go unless he says God's blessing on him. So it's all back to the blessing thing again, isn't it? Jacob has wanted the blessing of God since his early youth. He engaged in very foolish trickery against his own father in order to secure this blessing. And now, in his almost 100 years, because he was 97 as he's coming back from Mesopotamia. So he's almost a century old, and he's still begging God, give me this blessing. So the angel said to him, God said to him, what's your name? And he said, Jacob. So, what's your name? My name is Heel Grabber. That's what my name is. I'm the guy that tricks people. And God's response back to this changes history. Then he said to him, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, or Heel Grabber, trickster, but Yisrael, which means the man who strives with God. And it's the idea of striving till you get what you need. For you have striven with God and with men, and you have prevailed. So Jacob gets a brand new name, just like his grandfather got a brand new name. And even though he will still go by Jacob from time to time, he will typically be known as Yisrael from here on out. And this is the reason why the 12 sons of Jacob become the 12 tribes of Israel. Verse 29, then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. So let's exchange names here. You tell me who you are now. But he said, why is it you ask my name? And there he blessed him. Why he doesn't want to share his name? I don't know. Which angel is this? I don't know. There's just not enough information for us to make too much comment on this. In the end, Jacob gets what he wants. He gets the blessing of God and a promise that it'll be okay. Verse 30, so Jacob called the name of the place Penuel, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. So El is God, Penu is the face of. So he counts this as a divine encounter. The angel is the embodiment of God. And so he says, I wrestled with God face to face here, and I'm still alive. And then the sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. So he now goes across the river to join his family, and he's limping because of his leg being knocked out of joint, his hip being knocked out of socket. Now, this is not going to permanently debilitate him. It is a temporary thing. But there is a permanent custom that goes into place because of this. Verse 32, therefore to this day the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he, meaning the angel of the Lord, touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. Now, what this apparently is a reference to is the physical sciatic nerve that passes through this area. And observant Israelis do not eat the sciatic nerve of animals that are on their tables because of this event. As a reminder that something changed on this day. Chapter 33. Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming and 400 men with him, just like he was told. So he found that out the day before. He tried to make arrangements for it, prayed and wrestled with God during the night, got the blessing, and now he's ready. But he's still nervous. And listen to what he does. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. He put the servants with their children in front, and then Leah with her children, and then Rachel and Joseph last of all. So we have to be 100% honest here with Scripture. This indicates his personal valuation of his family members. The servants, the surrogate mothers with their kids, they get put up front because if something bad happens and people start dying and they would be the first, the others might have a chance to escape. Leah and her boys are in the middle. And then Rachel and Joseph, Joseph is about 6 years old right now, they are at the farthest back. So they've got the best chance of escaping. So imagine how this impacts upon the lives of the women here. The surrogate moms realized that Jacob values them the least and their kids. And Leah, even though she has been striving to get Jacob to love her and want to be with her, she realizes now she's still second to her sister. And so are her kids, the oldest boys. Her four boys are at the top of the family list. They are all in their, I think they'd be, let's see, what would they be? They'd be in their early teens at this point. Rachel, though, understands she's the most beloved, and so is Joseph. Now, this incident here may be the setting of the table for the bad attitudes of the older boys against Joseph. Now, we'll have some other things that Jacob does that will make that worse, but this valuation process may have started the hatred of the older kids against Joseph. Verse number 3. He himself went on before them. Now that is important to keep in mind. He's not staying at the back of the pack, hoping that he can escape if Esau starts killing people. He actually goes up front so that he would be the first one to die if something goes wrong. But he should have confidence after last night that nothing is going to go wrong. God has told him he is blessed and he is cared for and therefore he will be protected. So he himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times. We actually have practices from the ancient Middle East and Egypt where you showed your honor for someone by bowing before them 7 times. So here he is doing that. Until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. So Esau is the big surprise in this for Jacob. Esau is not holding back. He runs up to him, grabs a hold of him, gives him a great big hairy hug and starts kissing on him as his missing brother for the last 20 years, and then they both burst into tears. It is an emotional reunion, and it tells us that Esau has moved on. He is not angry anymore. He has been blessed by God in his own way. He has not lost out on any of the stuff that he originally was upset about because God's taken care of him. He's missed his brother. Verse 5, and when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children, he said, "Who are these with you?" And Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." And then the servants drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. And Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And last, Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. So, he does the great big family introduction. And you've been in this situation where it's been years since the last time you met some of your relatives, maybe your cousins, and they've got kids that you've maybe heard about, but you've never met. And so there's introductions all around. Then Esau turns to the gifts that were sent ahead. Esau said, "What did you mean by all this company that I met?" And Jacob answered, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." So Esau is like, "I don't need any of this stuff. I'm wealthy myself. Just keep it." Jacob said, "No, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand, for I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God, and you have accepted me. Please accept my blessing that was brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough." And thus he urged him and he took it. So Jacob insists, because again, as we talked about, this is restitution. He had wronged Esau. And so he owes him not just an apology, but something to make up for what he did to him. So he insists that he keeps it, and eventually Esau agrees, "Fine, I'll keep it, even though I don't need it." And so these two brothers seem to get back on the right page to fix their relationship. And then Esau said, "Let us journey on our way. I'm going to go ahead of you." And Jacob said, "My Lord knows that the children are frail and that the nursing flocks and the herds are a care to me. If they are hard driven for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant. I will lead on slowly at the pace of the livestock that are ahead of me and at the pace of the children until I come to my Lord in Seir." So Jacob begs off following Esau down to Mount Seir. It would appear that he's already got a different plan in mind. And so he makes excuses, first of all, reasonable excuses. "I can't be traveling at a fast pace because I've got all these animals. I've got my kids." He's already pushed them hard earlier in the trip, so he wants to take care of them now. So he says, "You go on ahead, and I'll catch up with you eventually at Seir." Now, a lot of commentaries say that he kind of stiffed Esau. He lied to him and never went down to Mount Seir. I understand where they're coming with that, but I am not so sure that's accurate. I think that Jacob does eventually go down and visit his brother. He may even take his family with him to do that. But he does not want to go and live with his brother. Nor does he want to go and live with his father and mother, whom I think he will also visit with the family in the near future. He needs and wants to be on his own. And so he doesn't want to travel any farther south than he is already. And so he has a plan in mind that involves staying with some of his stuff in the Jordan Valley, right here, where the Yabuk River joins the Jordan. And then he also wants to go up into the hill country to the west of there and establish another part of his sheep business, his goat business, and make this his home territory, because there's a valley where the Jordan River where the Jabuk River joins the Jordan here. There is another valley, a wadi that comes down out of the area by Shechem. And so this is going to kind of be his range territory right in this north part of Canaan. So he begs off going with Esau now with a promise that he'll see him later, but I don't think he was intentionally lying to him. I think that he was just keeping his options open for later. That's my opinion, all right? Verse number 15. So Esau said, let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. Remember, he's got 400 riders. But he said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. So, no, I don't need protection. Jacob probably didn't. He probably had quite a few workers himself. He's got a very large entourage. And so Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. And the next part of the story, which we have to wait until next week to pick up, is how Jacob established himself right in this region in the north part of Canaan.